Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Race and Lanes with your hosts Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Race and Lanes podcast. I am your host, Rico Muhammad. We'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Very excited for tonight's show. We have transportation attorney extraordinaire Hank Seaton along with us, and professional truck insurance. Tommy Roop is also going to be joining us tonight, and we are. I think that we are going in store for a slobber knocker of the show. We have some topics that are very, very provocative, very thought provocating. So we're going to get into those here in just a few minutes. But without any further ado, we're going to cover this DAT trend lines real quickly. I'm going to go through this kind of quick because whenever we have these type of guests on, I really don't want to waste too much time with anything other than speaking with them about what it is that we have to talk about. If you would like to get in and have a chance to ask a question or even join the conversation, all you have to do is press the number one. That gets you in the call screener's queue. We know that you want to get up and on board, and we'll try to get to you as quickly as we possibly can. But with that being said, without any further ado, this week's DAT trend lines report goes as follows. We have diesel price is relatively unchanged. We had a 0.4 percentage point of dip, showing that the national average price of diesel fuel at $2.42 per gallon nationwide on average. As COVID-19 continues to cause imbalances in the freight network, Tropical Storm, I'm going to butcher, but IASIS, I don't remember what the tropical storm they call it, caused further disruption last week, pushing more freight to the spot market. Some capacity returned to the marketplace, causing dips in load-to-truck ratios, but national averages remained elevated for this time of year. So let's take a look and see how the national averages were performing on the spot market previous week. Starting out with dry vans, we're looking at coming out of the northeastern portion of the United States, an average spot market rate of $1.71 per mile. Dropping down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing an outbound spot market rate of $2.03 per mile on average. Jumping up into the Midwest, showing a national average of $2.19 per mile for dry vans. Coming out of the South Central region of the United States, we're showing a national average of $2.09 per mile. Coming out of the Southeastern region, South Central region. And coming out of the left coast, we're showing an average spot market rate of $2.25 per mile. Jumping over and looking at the flatbed portion of the report, coming out of the northeastern portion of the United States, we have a national spot market average of $1.98 coming out of the northeast. Coming out of the southeast and mid-Atlantic states, we're showing an average spot market rate of $2.36 per mile for flatbeds. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing an average of $2.32 per mile for flatbeds. Coming out of the South Central region of the United States, we're showing an average flatbed rate of $2.27 on the spot market. And coming out of the West Coast, left coast, showing an average spot market rate for flatbeds at $2.04. Jumping over into the final portion of the report, the reefer temperature control portion, we're showing national averages coming out of the Northeast at $1.86. Coming out of the Southeast and Mid-Atlantic states, we're showing a national spot market outbound rate for reefers at $2.10. Coming out of the Mid-Atlantic, we're showing an outbound spot market rate out of the Midwest for $2.49 for reefers. Coming out of the South Central region of the United States, we're showing an average spot market rate of $2.25. And coming out of the West Coast, left coast, we're showing a national spot market rate of $2.53. And that's going to wrap up this week's DAT Trendlines report. And with that being said, and not without any much further ado, let me welcome my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Good evening, Chuck. How are you?
We're doing well, Rico. How are you?
Doing fantastic. I tell you, wanted to how are things going on your end up there up that way real quickly, and we're going to get our guests up and on board with us.
Well, you know what, we're seeing steady increases in volumes. Things look like they're getting a little better all over every week. So we're excited about that. The only thing we're concerned about is this, what's going on in the U.S. with the number of these COVID cases. That certainly could, it's starting to start some shutdowns in some areas. So we do have some concerns, but things don't get shut down in the near future. I think we may see our ways out of this thing.
Sounds good. So I think I'm not mistaken, but I want to check and make sure I didn't get a chance to check this line before we went live. But Mr. Rook, is that you right there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
All right.
Hey, Tommy.
Loud and clear. Loud and clear. And with that being said, let me grab our resident legal expert, Mr. Hank Seaton. So we got everybody. We got our guest panel up and on board with us tonight. Welcoming Hank Seaton and Mr. Tommy Rook to the show. Welcome you guys. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule for coming on to join us. And right off the bat, I want to go right back into what we talked about pre-show, Hank. I want to talk about this whole situation of dealing with these dispatch services that are representing themselves. I understand that there may be some good dispatch services out there and all that stuff, but really, you got some services out there that are representing themselves one way, and they may have 10, 15 different carriers that they're dispatching for, and they may take a load from a broker, and they one person may show up different than what was initially a totally different MC number that they initially booked the load up under, because they are a dispatch service, and now that they've obtained freight. So now they're just kind of playing musical chairs with brokered freight. Just wanted to kind of get a little clarification on how the eyes of the FMCSA looked at that and the ramifications of not only, insurance, but possible freight claims or possibly even stolen freight. How that whole slippery of a slope can this be?
The dispatch services say they're fulfilling a public need for small carriers because they're able to go out there and hunt loads for multiple carriers. They claim they're not a broker and don't have to be regulated because in making the deal, they say they're acting as an agent for the carrier and that the carrier bills and collects the money and remits the compensation to them. That's a nice idea, but it doesn't comply with either the regulations or the law. The regulations say a broker is anyone who arranges for transportation for compensation and who is not part of the carrier's ordinary business. And anyone who has the discretion to offer freight to multiple carriers is not a broker under the regulations. There have been cases involving that have held that even somebody like a DAT who doesn't handle the money, he's just a load line, needs a broker's license. And there are good reasons for that. It's not just that they have a $75,000 bond. It's also that there's assurance of the other compliance requirements with the regulations, such as not representing themselves as a carrier, such as not getting kickbacks. There are all kinds of good reasons for them to have a broker's license, and in fact, this issue has recently been presented to the new acting director of the FMCSA, who agrees that they need a broker's license. So I think that issue has pretty well been resolved.
So I have a question here, Nate. What is going to happen to there's several of these brokerage, or I should say load finding services? They're not really, they don't represent themselves as brokerage services. Are they all going to be, are they all going to get licensed now? Is that what the plan is, you think?
Well, you've got to realize the FMCSA is far more concerned about pursuing carriers who are not operating safely than they are
right.
in enforcing these regulations. The standard advice has always been to a 4PL who says, well, I'm just acting as the agent for the shipper, finding freight for them, to dial a truck and those kinds of
right.
people, and to these dispatch services. Look, carriers should credential you based on the fact that you're a licensed and authorized broker. It doesn't cost you all that doggone much. If you're
right.
going to be legit, put down your broker's license and get one.
Exactly.
You know, I think you have to ask somebody, well, what kind of shoestring operation are you if the law technically requires you to have a broker's license and you don't?
Right.
Can I get 2 cents in here?
Well, please,
sure.
Absolutely, if you can.
All right. Hey, I'm you know, I'm getting a board of lawyer here. I don't want to do this. You also, if this is a violation of Act 21, these people could be several and jointly liable for misrepresenting themselves as a broker in this case. And now what Hank said, it would lead to that. But the concern I would have is, and you can tell me this, guys, who's the Bill Layden's name in? Because this has an insurance ramification. Is it the carrier with the load, or is the dispatch service or some other carrier?
It is the dispatch service. Tommy, the dispatch services call up the load board and they say, I'm Hank Seaton. I've got an agency appointment from Root Transport. And then they would book it as Root Transport, allegedly with the power of the pen from you
okay.
to sign the load confirmation for Root. So,
so
they
the
try
bill
to
of
get
Layden
the name off the bill of lading.
So the Bill of Lading is in the name of the person who's actually the motor carrier who's actually hauling the load, correct?
Yes.
Sometimes.
Should be.
Okay. Well, the problem you have is that there's a number of insurance carriers. Let me finish that. There's a number of insurance carriers that have a provision in their cargo policy that says the Bill of Lading must be in your name. And if the Bill of Lading is not in your name, then there's no coverage.
Well, Tommy, I'm
glad we got both of you guys on here to kind of talk about this because, and we've talked about, and Hank, I know we've talked about this ad nauseum as far as making sure that your company or your name is on the bill of lading, and how it still baffles my mind how many guys don't even bother to make sure that their name is on the bill of lading, and how many brokers will tell you. When you go check in and such, and how many guys
uh-huh.
that just go along with that same old situation, and they check in as such, and you know whatever ABC truck or ABC brokerage or whatever, and that's who names is on the bill of lading, and you know, like I've always said, it's not a problem until it's a problem, and usually
right.
when it's a problem, it's a little bit too late.
Yeah, listen, Tommy has just opened up the door for what I hope we can talk about tonight, which is insurance prizes 101. Ordinarily, you would expect a cargo policy to say that it covers any shipment that you accept pursuant to a bill of lading or contract. And that or contract would say that if you get a load confirmation sheet from a broker that incorporates a written bilateral contract, that should be sufficient to say that there's insurance coverage, regardless of whether a broker's name's on it or an originating carrier, as long as you can prove that the loss occurred while the load was on your – the language that Tommy's talking about would vitiate coverage not only on brokered loads but on interline loads or final mile loads where – the bill of lading was picked up by an origin carrier and delivered by Two Truck Charlie. I think if there are those kinds of provisions in shipper contracts, that's just another unfortunate surprise that triggers the issue I'd like to talk about tonight, which is that insurance has so damn many loopholes that are not disclosed to carriers that most of these products aren't fit to sell.
Hank, whoa, you're stepping on my toes now. Let me defend this. Now,
I told the folks I might step on your toes.
Hank, you and I had an hour talk already this week, so I get a little minute here, okay? Hold
you
on
got
a
it.
Okay.
Take it.
First off, cargo forms are different than any other form we deal with. So the cargo is the most vulnerable form to have no coverage. So there are no uniform standards in it. And so when I say it clearly here, I said some cargo forms have that provision in it, which you have to read the form to determine. I'll tell you one even worse than this. It happened this week with somebody, and it's a major insurance carrier that you would recognize about this thing. But they had a load where somebody broke in the back of a truck hauling a load of soda pop, and they stole two pallets. But then the shipping document said if the seal's broken, the whole load is contaminated. And they rejected the whole load and destroyed the whole load. But now the insurance company is not covering that because there's no direct damage to those items that had to be destroyed. And so this is the kind of stuff that's happening, Hank, and I totally agree with you. Cargo insurance is by far the worst. You know,
and Tommy,
I'll debate you all day on that liability. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not fighting you on liability. Liability's got
right.
BMC 91X, and it's regulated. The FMCSA
right.
did us no favors when they took away the 32, which said that the insurance company would at least cover the first $10,000. Under CarMax. What you're talking about, though.
Hank, it was $5,000 and $10,000 max. Go ahead.
Okay.
Okay, guys,
all right.
Hold on.
Well,
hold
it was obviously it wasn't
what
enough.
You're talking about.
No, I
can we, guys, can we dumb it down just a little bit so our listeners can understand? You know, a lot of them are small fleet owners and stuff. So let our listeners know exactly what you guys are referring to.
I'll try to make it as simple as possible for a lawyer. It used to be that the federal government required an endorsement on cargo that's like what you have to file with the FMCSA for liability. And it offered assurances subject to small amounts to the shipper that their claims would be covered to the extent they were legally liable. That requirement went away. When it went away, it even emphasized further that these cargo policies are what we call manuscript policies. The poor carrier, if he's not told by his agent what exclusions there are, has got to wade through a 40-page policy and try to figure out what's not covered. So the result is in cargo, if it were patent drugs, the people would go on TV telling you about all the things that could happen if you took the drugs.
Right.
Well, there are
right.
all those kinds of things in cargo policies. Now, the problem Tommy just mentioned is a huge problem, and it results not so much from Swiss cheese in the cargo policy, but from the shippers who got the crazy idea that they could reject a whole load because the thief was a Pepsi man and rejected a load of Coke. And we know that there seems to be nothing we can do about Kroger and Cisco and all these people who put in their contracts that you'll waive inspection and waive mitigation. And the insurance people don't want to cover that because they only want to pay
right.
for the damaged product. And legally, they should only pay for the damaged product. But I'll be damned if we've had much luck getting that out of contracts. The shipping public or the broker public, in order to satisfy their customers, are putting that kind of crap in their standard contracts. Anybody on this call who signs standard contracts in the grocery house industry, look at it. It says in the middle of it somewhere that a broken seal can result in complete reduction or destruction of the product, and that the shipper will decide whether or not the product can be salvaged. Now, I'm on the insurer's side on that. I understand why they don't want to accept that kind of liability. Only one or two will sell that kind of coverage, and there's a premium for it. So on the one hand, the shippers are screwing us up.
Now, let me dumb it down a little bit, okay? You want it, guys, to what the people who are listening to us here. The key here is you've got to go to an agent who understands your business. And again, the people who go through our foundation, Hank will say that, the TRS designees, you know this, Chuck and Mark, have the teaching, and I teach exactly what Hank just said. You got to consent to salvage. That's what we're talking about. You got to worry about that. You got to find out about it. And you've got to tell your agent what you're hauling. And make sure on the application you tell them what you're hauling. And then what they'll do is then that puts the burden back on the agent to cover what you're hauling. And that's the key part here. The other thing is, as you just discussed here, don't accept the load if the document, the shipping document is not in your name. It has more ramification, Hank, even than the cover does talk about. But those bill of ladens talk about the care of the cargo and things like that, temperature and all this kind of stuff. And if it's not in your name, it becomes a legal part to decide what you can do. And most of the cases, it's not worth finding. Because there's another thing is, and this is also scary, if you got involved in a crash, even though you're not liable, the insurance company would have to defend you. Over half of the cargo policies you deal with, there's no duty to defend in them. So if there's a dispute, you have to address it yourself and have to pay the legal costs, the lawyer's costs. And the cargo forms are just all over the board. And the only answer is doing with an agent who understands your business and be full divulging everything you do as much as you can, tell your agent about it. And I'll
agree with Tommy. I agree.
Let me say one other thing. Hold on a second. Hank said 42 pages. Cargo policies are not that long, but I will tell you right now, the longer the policy is, the worse it is, period.
Yeah, 100%. And one of the things that I try to tell our carriers when I'm talking to them is don't lie to your insurance company. Tell them they're your partner. And a lot of times in this market, people aren't being 100% honest with their insurance company as to what they're hauling. And you know what? If you don't have insurance for precious metals, for God's sakes, don't load up a load of them. Because I can tell you, if something happens, people don't normally want to steal a load of Pepsi, but they certainly want to steal a load of silver.
One thing I agree that with Tommy on, and that is you don't buy cargo insurance based on price. You don't buy it from somebody that's a good guy you play golf with. You need to buy it from an expert. But also, you need to hold the expert accountable. Tommy and I were talking about one last week in which a client of mine who's in the air freight business and put on the policy that he was hauling electronics was sold by a major, major insurance broker, a policy that said there would be no coverage unless there was a driver on the truck at the time of the theft. Now, you think about that. That meant that from time of pickup to time of delivery, if you had the call of necessity, you had to do it from the rails of the truck. So that policy was virtually worthless to cover a theft of a large, expensive load of metal, of electronics. You know, at this point, I don't want to have to do it, but at some point, you have got to stick in the agent's ear a notice that says, you will bring me a simple common statement of any exclusion in the policy which would limit coverage for my legal liability. Because if you don't, the insurance company plays don't ask, don't tell. They will very simply not disclose to you what that policy says, and they'll leave it up to you to figure it out.
Well, let's go to Insurance 101. It's not the insurance company that deals with the retail with the motor carriers the insured. It's the retail agent. The retail agents are licensed by the state to be that intermediary, and it's their responsibility. Totally agree with Hank to the retail agent to make sure the coverage is improper. And the only way you can do that, going back to full divulging, because I agree with what Chuck said, is you tell them everything you're doing and how you're doing it. It's not can we cover electronics and have no problem with that. It's at what price. And so if they don't cover something, it's not they don't want to. or can't. It's just that the price they quoted you was based on what you told them you're hauling and you're doing, and therefore they didn't price for it. And so the agent, you got to deal with an agent who understands your business, not somebody on the phone, not somebody solicited you on a TV show or radio show, call-in show, those kind of things. It's got to be someone, and cargo is your most vulnerable policy you write or you accept.
Yep.
Right?
Let me do a quick little reset here, because we've had quite a few callers call in since we've been going. So I just want to tell the callers, the listeners, if you got a question, if you want to get in, we got two of the industry's best professionals on board with us tonight. We got, from a legal standpoint, we got Mr. Hank Seaton on board with us, and from an insurance standpoint, we got Mr. Tommy Rook on board with us. And between the two of them, they're gonna argue like hell both sides of the equation. So it's a really entertaining call tonight. But if you got a question about either one of those things, whether it's got anything to do with transportation law or whether it has to deal with insurance, you can go ahead and press the number one if you want to get in, or if you just tickle and listening to the guys going back and forth as I am. You can just sit back and listen in, and I guarantee you it's a very entertaining call, to say the least. All right, guys, I'm going to turn it back over. I'm going to get back out of the way and let you guys have at it.
Okay. Yeah, let him go back to swinging.
May I put a plug in, Chuck, and Hank, and all for the foundation?
Please, sure.
Absolutely.
Please, it's a wonderful.
We've got a not-for-profit foundation, and our whole objective is to help the motor carriers with the problems we just talked about. It costs you nothing. I have nothing to sell other than helping you. And so it's very simple, mcief.org, Motor Carriers Insurance Education Foundation.org. And our website says for the motor carriers, and a place there that says Ask Tommy. And there's a phone number there. I answer questions. If you got any question about it, if you're concerned about your agent or the company or something, call me. I don't sell anything for you other than trying to help you out to do exactly what Hank and Chuck was talking about. Don't leave you uncovered. And so please feel free to call that part of it. It doesn't cost you anything. Hank gives a lot of information out free, but he puts a bill on it sometime. I'm in part of my life that I don't really need to do that. So the foundation is there to help you. And both Hank and Chuck have been involved in the foundation, and I think you'll say amen to that we have the information available.
100%.
I definitely think so.
It was fantastic.
I, if there's anybody trying to educate insurance retail agents in trucking, it is Mr. Tommy Rook, and he does an excellent job. I guess my question, just to get another discussion going, what would you think about a service that examined the standard cargo policies from insurance carriers and digested those for use by agents and motor carriers, so that we could spot the most common issues and policies? It's frustrating to me to have one insurer who is a very reputable insurer, but they have got a definition of due course of transit that says that if you stop the truck overnight because the plant's closed, they'll deny the claim if there's a theft. At some point, we need to figure out how we're going to eat these things. Now, I agree, Tommy, most cargo claims aren't 47 pages, but I'll be happy to send you that one we were talking about last week with another very reputable carrier insurer. My concern is, how are we going to be able to, in some way, teach the agent what they're selling and hold them accountable?
Well, hold on, Hank. Two things, okay? First off, as you know, that's what I try to do. But the problem what you just came up with is the variance in trucking. If you're a flatbed operation, I don't care if you have a spoilage or temperature change exclusion on the policy. I do care if you have a striking exclusion. If I'm a dry van, I don't care about the temperature. It's the problem is that the policies, there's no good policy. Right policy has to meet what the insured is doing. So to come up with some things that would be a checklist, that gets back to the insured telling the agent what they're doing. And then I totally agree, hold the insured liable for, I mean, the agent, hold the agent now responsible for not providing the coverage of the exposure they told they had. That's the only way that this thing can happen, guys. And the other thing is, as you just said, don't buy the cheapest one in the marketplace because they'll end up costing you later. It just becomes a problem, and that's the only answer I have to it is full divulger and deal with an agent who understands your business.
One thing I think Tommy would agree with is there are a lot of particular smaller carriers who know that to get freight, they're going to have to pony up a certificate of insurance. A certificate of insurance, particularly on cargo, is worthless because it doesn't deal with the exclusions. If you think, well, gee, I'm going to wait to the last minute and buy the cheapest policy of somebody who'll issue a certificate of insurance, is really very foolish because obviously the cheapest policy may very well have the most exclusions. But in terms of doing your own risk analysis, you really, particularly on cargo, have to do two things. Number one, you got to be sure that you hold your shipper to legal liability, which is the Carmack Amendment, and which requires mitigation and adjustment with a release rate that's consistent with your limit of policy. So if you got it straight on the shipper end, then you got to get it straight on the insurer end and be sure that there aren't loopholes in legal liability that leaves you exposed. Particularly for theft, and I agree with Tommy that my analysis of a cargo policy would include flatbed loads must be tarped, and if that doesn't apply to a refrigerated carrier, he could check off not relevant. But these policies all have in the course of it, as many as two dozen variants from legal liability. I think everybody on this call could look at the exclusion simplified and say, well, gee, that applies to what I haul.
Well, it's even more than exclusion. You got things like drop and hook, care, custody, control responsibility, or care, custody, or control. I mean, Hank, everything you're saying, I preach all the time when we deal with cargo, but exactly right. It's got to meet what you do, and you've got to look at not only the exclusions, but also the requirements, the warranties. And what Hank did with, and what Hank was talking about, is an attended vehicle warranty, which basically says that the vehicle must be attended at all times by someone who's responsible to watch it. And if the driver's not there, it's got to be attended by some other party in it. I've been in errors and omission cases or lack of coverage cases on those things. That's what Hank's talking about. And that's relatively high value stuff, but can I say a joke here? There's got to be a pee break involved in that somewhere, does it not, Steve?
Well, guys, you know what? I've actually been involved with a client of mine probably 15 years ago to California that insisted, for obvious reasons, that it was team service only. It was just like Hank said, it was electronics, it was computer products. And the theft was so rampant with that commodity that they wanted teams, and the drivers could not leave the truck at the same time from California to Canada. And the theft was just off the charts. And finally, the customer, nobody would haul for them because everybody was saying their load's stolen somewhere along the line. So the customer bought their own policy and covered $250,000 of it. So the carrier didn't have to cover the first $250,000. But these things happen. And I want to mention something that I was talking to a small carrier last week, and he told me a story from hell. He had picked up, and here was a case where some guy that usually runs into Ohio and New Jersey, and there's no work available,
on the spot market going into those places that day out of Canada, ends up going somewhere in Nebraska or Kansas in the Midwest, ends up picking up a load for a small broker that he didn't know very well, and it turned out that the load was worth an awful lot more than his standard coverage, which his coverage, because he was a Canadian-based carrier, was, you know, $2 a pound. I think he had like an $80,000, $100,000 policy. And there was a, in this case, it wasn't a theft. It was a wreck. His product was ruined. It was worth $250,000. They've got the, it was just a dog's breakfast. There was the broker's name on the bill of lading. And the carrier has, I think, $80,000 coverage or $90,000 coverage. Canadian, by the way. And this was $250,000 U.S. What happens in these cases? If, you know, this is fresh. But here's a perfect example of a dog's breakfast. So I'm going to ask both of you, what happens in these cases? I'm real curious.
Well, let me chime in on this. Anybody's on this call, you be sure that in any contracts you get express language that says your maximum liability is the maximum liability of your policy. If you're $100,000 worth of cargo, do not let any language in that shipper contract open you up to unlimited cargo liability. I went through midlife crises a few years ago and had an interest in a motor carrier. And I was in the dispatch office, and they said, "Hot damn, man, we got this great load out of California." I said, she said, "It's too good to believe." I said, "Well, what is it?" She says, "Well, it says here it's starter jackets." And we put our head together and figured out that it was very expensive athletic wear, and it was probably worth, you know, $400,000, and we didn't have any release rate on it. So no wonder she thought she'd hit a home run.
Yeah,
I talked to the agents, and that's exactly what Hank just said. You want a tariff on that, and the tariff's got to say, the most I'm responsible for is the amount you require me to have. And hopefully that will then be interpreted, the lawyer, as a release bill of lading. Without that, you're 100% responsible for what the load is, based on CarMax, period. And so
and
without
the,
some indication like that.
And our friend here on here from Canada, if it originates up there, it's worth two loonies a pound. So we get into cases arguing over whether or not that load coming southbound is worth $100,000, but if it's going northbound, it's worth $400,000.
Right. Exactly. So this carrier will be responsible for that full amount. Is that what you think in this case?
If there's no contractual language limiting his liability, or if his tariff didn't say our standard rate's $100,000, but you can pay more and maybe get $150,000,
right.
They've got to have choice and opportunity in a unilateral tariff. But in a contract,
right.
if you waive CarMax, you can say a maximum liability is $100,000.
Okay.
Yeah, but the carrier's responsible for the full value. And the scenario that Chuck, that you just came up with, is the worst one. Small broker who's just trying to book the load has no idea what
That's
the
right.
load's worth. If you get with somebody,
exactly.
and again, I'm not using my father, you get somebody like my father, he knew what a load of pickles was worth. He made sure there was enough limits there because as a broker, he's responsible for that. But some of these brokers you have don't know what those loads are worth. They're just trying to book it.
Right. Exactly. And that was exactly what happened here. I'm sure the broker carries no insurance and just put it on this guy. And this guy didn't know enough. You know, he's way out of his league, doesn't know what he's hauling. You know, a lot of times dispatchers and people taking orders, just like Hank said about those jackets, they don't question what they're hauling. And you really need to know. So you can figure out what the value of this stuff is. You know, at least
Chuck,
they,
I hate to bring, I want to bring another negative up. Even if the broker's got insurance, that contingent insurance will pay it, but they're going to subrogate back against the motor carrier for what they had to pay that the motor carrier didn't cover.
That's that. Not only is that right, but the biggest issue I've had in the past month is brokers trying, or shippers insisting that the broker have $300,000 worth of cargo, so the broker goes out and buys a $300,000 face contingent liability policy and doesn't realize it follows form. So he tells the shipper he's got $300,000, but all he's got is a guarantee of $100,000 because he can't find motor carriers that have more than $100,000.
And some of them say the most we're going to pay a contingency, even though the limit's $300,000, is how much you require to have if the broker doesn't have that limit.
Oh,
some
it's contingent. It's contingent on the on the carrier's policy not paying, and it's limited to the amount of the carrier's policy. And
exactly.
I can't tell you how hard it is to get these people that sell the contingent policies to acknowledge that.
Well, there are some, Hank, as you know, that will do the full limit, that will pay and then seek reimbursement from the motor carrier and be responsible for the full limit. But that's a more expensive policy, not the cheaper policy. So those
you
are
need
the,
to send
I
me
mean,
a list of people who will at least write it because I'm having a hard time.
All right. Well, you got somebody, we won't talk about our friend in Nashville, okay? Anyway.
Well, he's not one that will. We know that.
Well, small accessory world. Well, I'll get you some information about that. But these are the things that we're talking about that I'm telling agents every day that are in front of us, me. And this is standard. Everything Hank has just said is the standard teaching of what I do. That's why it's important for these insurers, motor carriers listening to deal with agents who understand what that business is. Now, and hopefully
100%.
The agents that I train have the foresight and the patience to make sure that they're doing it right like this. But it's not because we're not trying to preach that gospel.
Let me give Tommy a plug here because Tommy thinks I pick on him. I've gotten to the point when somebody comes to me with an insurance question and says that they've got a great agent. I said, ask him if he participates in Tommy Rook's program. And if the answer comes back no, then I immediately shop his insurance.
But just to make it worse, Hank accused me of being a lawyer the other day. I don't want to go down that path.
Well, I don't want to be an insurance agent either.
Okay, we'll stay on each side of the fence, my friend.
I want to sell something that's got some value to it.
Well, you want to find out the loss ratios have been 109%. It looks like what we're selling has more value than what we're collecting for it too. If you look at the history, that's auto liability, obviously, but that's the crunch right now. It's tough to get insurance just because the market has shrunk even more. I don't know if you saw this, but Lloyd's of London is getting out of the primary market. They're giving up their admitted status. And just because they have not made money.
Let me ask you a question. I read that in Transport Topics or Freight Waves about Lloyd's of London. Now, what market? It was a little bit, not being an insurance guy in the U.S., I didn't quite understand. What
here's
market
the problem,
are they actually leaving?
All right, Chuck, here's what it is. There's two ways to write insurance. One is a MIDI company, which falls under an auspice of some department of insurance. Those are the forms, regulations, services, taxes, etc. Or non-admitted does it. To write motor carriers with MC numbers, you have to be an admitted carrier in some state. Lloyd's was admitted in Kentucky and Illinois because that's what the 91X requirement is. And so now when Lloyd's exited from the admitted market, they can no longer make any 91X filings. So, therefore, they cannot write the premium. That doesn't mean they can't reinsure it, but their name will not be on it anymore. And it's going to be a year from now. They haven't done it right now. They can still write cargo, but not auto liability for trucks with MC numbers.
And they're going to stay in the reinsurance market, I would presume.
Right, or not admitted. I mean, they write ton of GL and property. I mean, my homeowners down here in Florida is with a not admitted insurance company. Just how they choose to do it. The advantage of not admitted is they don't have to be assessed and guarantee funds and they got a little more freedom of pricing and rates and this kind of stuff. That's one advantage of it. It has something also guarantee funds with security involved in it too, but it's more than that. So it's just that's what that market exit is, was exit that. And actually, I got a printout of all the 91Xs that Lloyd has filed on right now, the current current FMCS database, to know which ones are going to have to be replaced.
Wow.
You know what?
So does that mean like for our little expediters groups where those programs that are put together with Lloyd's paper, that they'll all have to find somebody else?
Hank, if Lloyd's is the insured market, it is, yes. You know, as you know, you've got some funding companies, State National, Blue River, and things like that, and they reinsure it. But if the policy says Lloyd's and they write auto liability, it'd have to have a 91X filing. Now, they can write auto liability non-admitted in California, Texas, Louisiana, those states. So that you're talking about in that case. But if you have to make them filing, you have to be an admitted carrier. So that would be the way you would distinguish it, Hank, between the two.
Okay. But people like TT Club get drug into the greater Lloyd's filings, or are they different? We all know they're different syndicates in Lloyd's.
Yeah, no, it's Lloyd's. It's Lloyd's as a name. They file that with the states. They don't do the syndicates. The paper's coming out under Lloyd's of London, and that's the admitted market. It's Lloyd's of Illinois or Lloyd's of Kentucky is their current admitted market that can file 91Xs.
Okay.
Let me jump in real quick, guys. I want to, because we've gotten quite a significant boost of callers once again. And I just want to let the callers and listeners know that if you got a question tonight, we have a legal expert, Hank Seaton, on board with us tonight. So if you got a question about anything transportation law related, now is a great opportunity to get your question answered, not from a lunch counter lawyer, but from an actual real lawyer that actually passed the bar exam. And, get some actual good advice that you might be able to use and be able to get some action out of. And also we have insurance expert Tommy Rook on board with us. So if you got any questions about insurance, anything about your policy, any questions pertaining to those two, it's fair game. You can press number one if you want to get in and ask a question. And if they happen to disagree on something, we've already seen the fireworks from that. So I'm going to turn it back over. I'm going to get back out of the way and enjoy the show. So if you guys got a question, like I said, go ahead and press number one. Don't be ashamed. Don't be bashful. It's no such thing as a stupid question or a dumb question. We got about a little less than 12 minutes left in the show. So, you know, now's a perfect opportunity to get your questions in.
If they don't have time, let me just say, my name is Tommy Rook, Ruke, TommyRuke at AOL.com. You can email me if you got any questions, and I'll answer them that way. That's easy to remember.
Tommy, I need to ask you something. Your accredited agents and brokers that have gone through your program, do they offer insurance to trucking companies from those insurance companies that are not A-rated?
The answer to that question is most of them have a security check A-rated. B-plus is not that bad in that area. But, yeah, that's a part they have to divulge. And that way, Chuck, because, you know, there are a couple of them that even Hank will know that's B-rated, B-plus rated that aren't financially impaired, and that just has to do with some reinsurance and some best rating. That's a rating bureau, but most of them don't want or will not write a company that's not at least B plus, if not A rated. That's
okay.
Part of the programs that we have, Chuck.
Okay, because you know that's certainly a concern. There's a lot of inexperience out there with buying truck insurance. I've been buying truck insurance now for altogether for 46 years, and I'm not an expert. I deal with the same company I've been dealing with for years. Actually, the gentleman I was with, my insurance broker, or agent, he took me to about four different brokers through the years, and the last place he ended up, I've been there for probably 15, 20 years, and I get calls every year, just before my insurance is due, asking me, from different brokers, saying, "Do you want to come with me?" But the relationship is so important, and I can't stress that enough to our listeners. I remember just before I went to your show, your conference last year, Tommy, Rico had one of his friends and associates on, and this woman owned a small trucking company, and she had had some really tremendous experience herself in the insurance industry. She was had been an insurance executive in another life, and she was telling our listeners that they should cut the agents out and go direct, and I was cringing when I heard this because I know how complex buying truck insurance can be. And then when I went to that seminar you put on the conference in Orlando, and I met all those agents, and I listened, I attended some of the lectures, and these people are really getting quite an education. And I think that in order to sell in truck insurance, you should have that sort of education. Unfortunately, Canadian brokers don't have it. They're still knowledgeable, but I think it would really help them to attend the courses from your foundation.
Well, we're doing more online and all, Chuck, and I appreciate that part. But that's our whole purpose, because everything, if anybody hadn't heard these first 50 minutes, it's complicated. And the thing that makes it complicated is that there's no common motor carrier. If you're a restaurant, we know what a restaurant is. If you're a pizza parlor, we know it. But trucking varies so greatly through the breadth of it, and coverage becomes part of it regulated, the government required by shippers, and then unregulated policies like cargo. That's why you have to go with someone who understands your business, and they're your spokesman. They're the person who takes your portfolio, who you are, to the insurance company to negotiate the best rate and the best coverage they can for you. And so that's why Chuck said you got to be honest with them, guys, and tell the truth.
Yeah. Don't fool with that, because you'll end up like our friend that ended up with with the load that was worth more than his policy. You've got to be honest with your insurance supplier. And there's no room for anything that's not true. I don't know what it's like. Go ahead.
One other thing, guys, from the lawyer here, with anybody that's on the line, when you place your insurance, put in writing what your needs are, because you don't want to get in a liar's contest with what the agent knew or what he didn't know. You need to put in writing exactly what you need, and I think that you should put the burden on him to tell you if there are any exceptions, exclusions, or policy term and condition that would limit your coverage extensive with CarMax, because that should be the standard, and that should let him do the hunting through the policy. Because trust me, I wouldn't want a layman looking at those cargo policies and trying to figure out what they mean.
No,
there's one part
here that's
complicated. Every policy you buy, people who's listening to us, starts with an application that's filled out, and you supposedly sign that application. You got to read what you put down in the application, number of units, and particularly what you're hauling. That's the cargo part. And so then it puts the burden back. But that's how it starts, with an application that's supposed to be signed by the insurer. And that spells what you do, and that's where you start with. I agree with what Hank's saying. Anything outside of that, you got to divulge too, but at least read the application and make sure the application is properly described, particularly in cargo, everything you're going to haul.
Yeah, definitely. Make sure there's no exclusions for anything you are going to load on your trailer, because if something happens, you're going to be in trouble. There's no two doubts about it.
With that being said, I'm looking at the time. We didn't get many. Well, we didn't get anyone that took the bait on actually getting a chance to try to get in and ask a question. But I'm looking at the time.
Well, good luck with that.
I want to start wrapping. I got to start wrapping up here. So with that being said, Hank Seaton, you can get in contact with Hank. Go check out his website, transportationlaw.net. If you don't have his book, Rules of the Road, you are absolutely doing yourself a terrible, terrible disservice. It's, you know, I call it the motor carrier's Bible. You really need to have this book on your bookshelf because it helps raise awareness and bring to the forefront all of the things that you as a motor carrier that you need to be aware of all the different entanglements that you can get yourself into with dealing with these contracts. And he highlights them all, and he brings them out and shows you specific language in the book that you can see once you start to read some of these broker contracts that's going to make your antenna pop up. Also, not only just talking about the broker contracts, but also dealing with what we were just talking about, insurance. But another thing that Hank absolutely talks about in the book as well is dealing with factoring companies, understanding your factoring contracts. So all of these different things, all these different nuances, Hank covers in depth in that book. And if you don't have it on your bookshelf, I'm telling you, you don't know exactly. You don't know what you don't know. And this book kind of helps highlight some of the stuff that you really do not have a clue of what you may be exposing yourself to. So with that being said, like I said, transportationlaw.net. And Hank never tells me or asks me to do any of these plugs that I'm doing, but I'm telling you, I'm speaking from an impassioned personal point of view. This is nothing that I receive any compensation or anything like that from. I'm just telling you, you know, you definitely need to have this book so that you can be aware of what it is that you really are not aware of and do not know. And it's broken down in the layman's terms where you can really understand. You can pick that book up and also take a look at Hank's other material over at transportationlaw.net. Tommy, tell the good people again about the foundation and how they can get in contact with you.
Just MCIF, Motor Carriers Insurance Education Foundation.org. We have a website. Part of that website is ask if you're a motor carrier. We do ask you to give us your DOT number, not for solicitation purposes, because we charge everybody else who does that, who goes into this detail, but we don't charge motor carriers. That's just to identify you. We're not sending anywhere. And there's things there to ask Tommy or training. We're putting more and more information up for you to look at. But the big question is an 800 number. You can call us or email questions to the TRS at MCIF.org. And or my name, Tommy, at MCIF.org, and we'll answer your questions. That's the best thing we can do. If you need an agent to be referred to, we'll do that too, but only if you request it. We don't do it unless you request it. And by the way, Rico, your agency down in your area does have a TRS designation.
I actually met, Rico, I met your agent last year when I was down at Tommy's convention in Orlando. Great people.
I'm satisfied with my guys. They do a great job. I've been with them ever since I've been in business. I haven't switched insurance companies, and I haven't switched agencies. So, you know, I'm really they do a great job down there. Chuck, before we get out of here, we got a few seconds left. Tell the people how they can get in contact with you, and we're going to bring this thing to a close.
Okay, if you need anything, give me a call at 800-388-4352. My extension is 203. If you don't get me, leave a message with a phone number. I promise to call you back. You can just send me an email if you want. Very easy. Just chuck at traffics, traffix.com. Or you can send me a private message on Instagram, Chuck Snow, CEO. If you need a hand with something, you need some advice, no matter what it is, if you want to get set up with Traffics, you want to get hold of me, and I can help you, get you in touch with the right people for the right loads. Anything I can do to help any of our listeners, just contact me. Thank you.
Well, and tonight you have been listening to, I want to say thank you on behalf of Tommy Roots, Chuck Snow, and Hank Seaton. You've been listening to the Racing Lanes podcast. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you were here with us, and we definitely appreciate it. Whether you're listening to the show live or what your busy schedule to go back and download the show and listen to it at a later time and date. We definitely appreciate you. Hopefully you got some, we provided some type of value to you, that you got something from this podcast, that you got something from the show, and that you leave here a little bit smarter than what you came in with. If you got anything that you have questions about, you know, we're here to, we do the show for you guys. Task us, let us know what it is that you want to hear about, and we'll go out and try our best to make it happen for you. We'll go out and try to get the professionals that can answer your questions, that can give you a much more in-depth insight into what it is that you would like to know about. All you have to do is just drop us a line, whether it be on Facebook or whether it be on Instagram. We do the show for you guys. So God bless you. Good night. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise, and God willing, we'll talk to you same time, same place next week.
Catch you on the flip flop.
Enjoyed it, guys. Take care.
Thanks for letting me get a word in.